examining what he'd excavated. The last of the men lounged against a painted pole that rested on a pair of old barrels on either side of the rickety bridge.
Roll it down and hand over the jack.
Go!
Jack stomped down and the wag jerked forward, slowly starting to gather momentum. The albino had his magnum resting in his lap, and he snatched it up. Schubert jumped for the running board and hauled himself up. He had a Tate 32 in his hand and jammed it in the narrow slit of the set window.
You ain't Rins, you muty bastard! We'll kill you, right?
Shut it.
Jack shot the man through his open mouth. The bullet smashed a great chunk of bone out the back of his head and kicked him into the dirt on the side of the road. It was the only shot that anyone aboard the wag needed to fire. Ryan had been right in his summing up of the blaster threat from the men. With their leader rolling in dying agony, none of them wanted to be dead heroes. The armored radiator of the wag tore through the pole barrier, splitting it in two, one half wheeling high in the air and eventually splashing down near the edge of the muddied waters of the Delaware. Ryan heard the sound of a ragged volley from the muskets, but as far as he could tell, none of them struck the retreating wag.
Everybody okay?
Yes,
I'm fine.
Oh, yes.
The heavy tires thrummed on the planks of the bridge. Jack was still accelerating when Ryan leaned over and tapped him on the arm.
Slow down, Summer. We'll be in the river.
Don't worry.
The boy grinned, eyes burning with crazed delight. But he did slow down. The next day, they cut southward across the Blue Mountains, eventually picking up what remained of the old Interstate 78 and following it for 15 or 20 miles as they came closer to Harrisburg and the Susquehanna River. The road was mainly in good shape, and they barreled along at a reasonable speed. They ran through a couple of heavy storms, rain streaming off the side of the highway, and gathering in deep-rutted pools where the top surface had been eroded by 100 winters and summers. They saw very little evidence of any settlements near the road, though Christie smelled smoke several times during the day. It wasn't until later the next morning that they encountered any people.
Some loved Negras, and some wanted to chill all the Negras?
Doc shook his head in exasperation at Lori's question.
No, no, no. And I only used the word Negra because that was the epithet that was current coinage back then. It is not a good word, my sweet little child. Not a good word at all.
Sorry, Doc, but I didn't...
Gentlemen in the South kept blacks as slaves. Those north of the Mason-Dixon line, as it was known, believed that all men were created equal and should all be free.
Sounds right.
Man with the biggest blaster has the biggest hunk of the freedom.
I fear your jaded view of life is too often correct. Certainly the Civil War ended that way.
A young deer had appeared unexpectedly out of the brush in front of the wag, at a point where the road was so rough that Jack had to crawl along in the lowest gear. The ports and obsolets were open, and J.B. felled the beast with a single shot from his Styrog hand blaster. By mutual agreement, they stopped at the next safe site and built a fire. The deer was skinned, jointed, and roasted. It was a beautiful spot for a camp. A scattering of aspens, their tops shimmering silver, swayed in the northerly breeze. A stream bubbled nearby in a series of little falls and pools. The whole place was rich with a profusion of wildflowers, hedge nettle, sage, and fringed phacelia, in a mix of delicate colors and shapes. Lori had woven herself a necklet of white and lavender blossoms, letting them dangle between her breasts as she sat and licked smears of blood from the roasted haunch of the fawn. Christie had brought up the subject of the Civil War, knowing from her teachings as a child that they were coming into an area where some of the most intense fighting had occurred. Doc had been delighted to share his reminiscences with her.
Those names, Shiloh, First Bull Run, some called it Manassas, Stones River and Chickamauga, Chancellorsville and Antietam, the Wilderness and Spotsylvania. The sepia prints by Brady of untidy corpses along a picket fence. Even in Vermont as a child, I saw men still dying of their wounds from those battles. And the generals. Names that tripped off the tongue like a litany of the gods of Olympus.
Tell us. Better than using a gateway as a time machine.
Doc leaned back, picking at his strong teeth with a long thorn plucked from a dog briar.
There was Grant above all, Ulysses Grant, and Lee, and Sherman, and Hood, and Nathan... I don't recall his other name, but...
You ever meet any of them, Doc? What kind of blasters they favor?
I was only a child. Many died during the conflict and shortly after. But I did meet General Grant, and a sorry meeting it was.
Why?
You ask me why, Ryan, and I shall tell you. Indeed, it will give me pleasure to tell you.
Ryan spotted the beginning of the rambling repetition that indicated Doc's memory wasn't yet completely healed, and probably never would be.
An uncle of mine, whose name escapes me, was one of the physicians attending General Grant during his terminal illness. I visited him on the very day that the great man finally lost his hold on the tenuous thread that bound him to his corporeal self. Once severed, he would be free to roam with the immortals in the fields of Elysium.
Jack picked at the ends of a frayed length of meadow grass.
Who chilled him?
A cancer that ravaged his mighty frame. His passing was truly a relief and a mercy after many long days of agony and anguish for all who loved him. It was a dullish sort of day, I recall. I was a lad of 17 or so. He tried to sit and was staring out at the casement. I kept mouse quiet in the corner of his chamber. He called out once and then fell back dead.
What did he say, Doc?
He had a female companion. He said very clearly to her, "It is raining, Anita Huffington." And then he passed away.
Nobody spoke. And then Doc stood, stretching his angular frame and taking Lori by the hand.
Now I think this innocent child and I will walk among the trees and flowers and commune with nature. We shall return within the hour.
Take care. Ryan watched the old man go off, still holding the hand of the tall, blonde teenager.
JB said there was another river and bridge coming?
Not far off. We'll cross it when we come to it, kid. That's a joke, Jack. Cross the bridge when we come to it?
Jack just stared at him. Christy smiled.
Very nearly, lover.
She stood, balanced against the rocking of the vehicle, and proceeded to climb onto the support platform beneath the main roof vent. Then she lifted head and shoulders into the open air.
Beautiful up here. You can see ahead for miles. Looks like the main highway's been wasted about a mile on. But there's an older, narrow road to the left.
Jack acknowledged her warning, and 4 or 5 minutes later, the wag swung off down a bumpy, dusty slope, swaying along the ancient track. Christy stayed up on top, her long hair streaming out behind her like a great veil of fire. The land was growing hillier as they moved farther southwest, and swaths of conifers covered the rolling land. About 15 minutes later, she shouted down to Jack to pull up.
And switch off the engine a while. I need quiet.
Christy jumped out through the sliding door at the side of the sekwag and stood in the furrowed dirt of the trail. The others, one by one, climbed out after her. Jack was last, wiping sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand. Ryan joined Christy, who stood staring intently down the road. Ryan was proud of his own keen sight and hearing, and he often tried to match Christy's mutie-enhanced skills.
What is it, lover?
Not sure.
Far off?
She nodded, face wrapped with concentration.
Yeah. 3, maybe 4 miles on. Wind's carrying it toward us.
What is it, Christy?
A couple of things. A quarter of an hour ago, I'm certain I saw someone using binoculars. Caught the flash of glass. Then I saw nothing else, so I figured it could easy have been the sun off a fragment of broken glass in the undergrowth.
It was a reasonable assumption. The whole of the Deathlands was riddled with twisted metal, fallen stone and broken glass.
But?
But now I smell oil and fire. Hot iron. Thought I heard shots. If you look a little to the left of where the road crosses the next ridge, near in line with that broken water tower leg...
Jack's sight was nearly as keen as Christie's, when the light wasn't too bright to affect his sensitive eyes.
Smoke!
Then Ryan could see it as well. A thin column, its top tinted crimson by the brazen ball of the sun. It was 200 or 300 feet high, gradually dissipating near its peak as the wind tore it apart. It was difficult to be sure, but it looked to Ryan as if the smoke had that dark, oily quality that spoke of serious trouble.
Back in the wag. Close up the roof vent and drop the obslits. Don't bolt them shut, but keep ready by them. Any of the blaster ports not covered by someone, it best be locked. That's close enough, Jack. Hold her here, but keep her running.
They were about 100 paces away, and Ryan squinted through the narrow gap in the wired glass at what looked to be a battered truck. The tires were gone, burned to sticky black tar, and all the windows were broken. The piles of charred wood heaped at the bottom of the vehicle still smoked, sending gray coils skyward. The metal of the wag was rusted deep orange, even around the wheel hubs, and it had settled into the earth. The others crowded forward for a look at the wreck.
Been ambushed?
Looks that way. Still a lot of smoke. Best wait a while before we go past it. Anyone could be waiting for us.
They sat and watched, the smoke slowly clearing. There were no bodies visible, which could mean the attackers had taken them prisoner. Or it might mean the wreck held roasted corpses.
Want me to move on?
Whoever did this can't be far off. Don't forget Christy said she saw someone spy-watching us, so they know we're here.
There was something about the wrecked truck that somehow didn't sit right with Ryan. Something out of place that nagged away at the back of his mind. But he couldn't quite grab hold of the doubt and examine it.
Okay, slow and easy. Double care, friends.
Ryan saw the two figures first, torn and ragged, stumbling on the broken surface of the road. Their clothes were strips of blackened material and hung off their bodies. Their faces were smudged with dirt, oil, and smoke, hair flattened against their heads. Their hands were empty. Jack's tongue flicked to lick his dry lips.
Stop, Ryan.
Everyone looking? See anyone?
No.
Not here.
No one.
Nobody could see anything threatening from their obslits.
Stop. Keep double red alert. Nobody move or open anything.
It was impossible to tell the sex of either of the people who had staggered to a halt in the center of the highway. They were both of average height and lightly built. As far as Ryan could see, neither had any obvious mutie defect. As the wag stopped, both of them held up a hand, palm outward. Suddenly, the one on the left collapsed like a doll, lying sprawled in the dirt.
Survivors from an ambush? You gonna help him, lover?
Pull alongside them, on my side.
He wound down the window a couple of inches. He realized that the person still standing was a woman. The other was a male.
Help us, mister. Got ambushed by muties. Came out and blocked the road. Set us alive before we could do anything.
The eyes were deep cornflower blue. Beneath all the dirt and oil, Ryan guessed she might have been a good-looking woman. Her body was lean and muscular. One firm breast protruded through a tear in her jerkin. The man on the ground moaned, head half turned to stare up at Ryan.
Oh, help, mister. We'll die if you don't. Oh.
Ryan was still conscious of some incongruity about the wrecked wag.
How did you get out?
Luck, mister. There was a dozen of us. Tried to fight the dead eyes in the open. Too many of them. Chilled most of us and took a couple of kids with them. Me and Jim runned in the brush. They let us go.
Her story made sense. Ryan had lived long enough in the desert.